We've all heard it before. It's who you know. Now hear why it's so true. Welcome to Social Capital, a weekly podcast where we dive into social relationships and how the investment you put into them establishes trust, reciprocity, and value within your network and community. Your host, Lori Hybe, will connect with top professionals and dive into their best networking stories and techniques to share with you.
Hey everybody, Lori Hybe here. Welcome to the Social Capital Podcast. Our show notes are found at socialcapitalpodcast.com. You can always follow me on Twitter at LJ Hybe and Facebook at Social Capital with Lori Hybe. All links mentioned will be found in the show notes. This week's guest is Gina Cocking. Gina is a managing director and partner at Colonnade Advisors, a boutique investment bank specializing in sell-side mergers and acquisitions and capital raising in the financial and business services sector. Colonnade's clients are large corporate entities typically selling a non-strategic business, private equity firms, and founder family-owned companies. After college at the University of Chicago, Gina joined the investment banking industry at Kidder Peabody and later J.P. Morgan, where she advised companies on M&A and debt and equity offerings. She has been with Colonnade for over 6 years. Gina also spent a year with the private equity firm Madison Dearborn Partners. Gina has operating experience as the CFO of a specialty finance company, as a CFO and director of HR of a private equity-backed manufacturer, and as the CFO of consumer banking businesses within Discover Financial Services. Gina received her MBA from the Booth Graduate School of Business at the University of Chicago. Wow, Gina, that's quite a rap sheet you got there.
Thank you.
Thanks for being on the show.
Of course, of course.
All right, so, I really don't know much about private equity buyers and whatnot, so I'm going to ask some questions around there. What do private Sure. equity buyers and strategic buyers look for in buying a company?
Lori, that's a great question. Thank you. In the private equity world, private equity acquirers are usually looking for companies that have shown sustainable growth, consistent earnings, strong management teams in large industries. So to break it down into some numbers, the vast majority of private equity acquirers out there are looking for companies that are doing at least $5 million in operating income. They're looking for companies that have a strong management team that wants to stay with the company post-acquisition by the private equity firm to run the company. They're looking for companies that are participating in an industry that is growing, so the company has opportunities to grow in the industry. And they're looking for companies that maybe are a little complicated or have some other strategic advantage in the marketplace that differentiates them from others that are attacking the same problems.
All right. So interesting. Complicated and differentiators, I feel like. I like those words, but it totally makes sense, everything as far as what they're looking for. Mm-hmm. When a private equity fund buys a company, how is that transaction structured typically?
Typically, a PE firm will come in and say, well, we're not in the business of running a company. You know, that's why private equity firms are great partners for owner-operators of companies. The PE firm is bringing a couple things to the table. They're bringing money to help fund growth. They're bringing kind of management consulting expertise. So they're really good at helping structure compensation plans for team members, figuring out new business strategies, hiring the right people for the right seats. But what they're not going to do is operate the company on a day-to-day basis. So when they come in, they would like the owners of the company typically to continue running the company. So to make sure that the owners, the existing owners of the company have skin in the game, they will typically ask the existing owners to roll over some equity. So let's say you have a company that is doing $10 million in operating income. And I like to keep the math simple. $10 million of operating income. And the private equity buyer says, I will pay you 10 times earnings for your company. So that's $100 million valuation. They will typically ask the owners to roll over 10 to 40% equity in the company. So that means the PE firm might be stroking a check for $60 to $90 million. And the existing owners are going to retain 10 to 40% equity in the company. And then they continue to run the company. In addition, the PE firm require earnout payments, meaning they may say, we believe in you, you're great, but we're paying you also for future growth. So of that $100 million, you know, 30% is being rolled over in equity, and we would like 10% paid out in an earnout over the next 2 years, meaning, so you're making $10 million this year. If you hit $12 million next year, we'll pay you that 10%. So there are different hurdles that the PE firms will put in place. And what they're basically trying to do is make sure that the management team has skin in the game and they're hitting their future earnings. Now, what if a PE firm comes in and the owner operators don't want to stay with the company? That is possible if there's a great management team in place that can take the reins of running the business. But if the management team that's remaining isn't very strong, that will probably impact the valuation of the company. So owner operators have to kind of make that trade-off when they're looking at a transaction. You know, if I stay with the company and commit myself to the next 3 years with this business, I, you know, will get a valuation of $100 million, let's say. But if I leave the company, I'm going to get a valuation of $70 million. So, the PE firms, you know, will take into account what the management team wants to do and how they're structuring a transaction.
Wow, that's a lot of information. It's really helpful, though. You broke it down in a really nice, clear way that I think all of our listeners are going to appreciate. You know, one of the questions I have now is, as a business owner myself, is the relationships that you have with, you know, these other owners primarily through networking, or how do you find people that you're, you know, helping their business growth or investing in them? I'm just curious, and this is all about networking, so let's see how that's put together.
It is. I'm essentially a small business owner also. We have a boutique investment bank, and we, as the three partners here that run the company, we are not only working on deal execution, but also on client development. And in developing our clients, it really is a long-term game. You know, we get to know companies, and we watch them and work with them and provide advice and just check in with them for a long period of time. We had a deal that we did 2 years ago that my partner started calling on 10 years ago. It took 10 years before he decided he was ready to sell his company. And that's okay. You know, we get to know a lot of companies, and we follow them and stay in touch with them and provide them information. Now, the way we get to know companies is kind of a multifaceted process. One way is through, you know, just visiting them. So when I go to a town for business, so for example, when I'm in Dallas, I will make sure that if I have a meeting in Dallas with a client, I will make sure to spend an extra day in Dallas and set up meetings with either people I've met in the past or companies I have never met in the past. And typically, if I call a company and say, hey, I'm Gina Cocking, and I'm an investment banker, you know, I help companies in the M&A process, and I know your industry well, typically that gets a warm reception and people are interested in talking. So in a typical day, we'll have 3 to 5 meetings, one or two maybe with brand new companies we've never spoken to before. And that's how we start to build our network. Then we tend to follow those companies, you know, electronically, and we'll follow up with them on LinkedIn, so we're connected with them, and we'll add them to our database, and we'll reach out to them periodically if we have transaction announcements. Another thing that we do is we write industry white papers, and most of the industries that we focus on, we're an investment bank focusing on financial services and business services. And within financial services, we work with some very specialized companies, specialized industries, such as insurance premium finance or the automotive F&I industry. We write white papers on those industries, and we put those out, you know, on our website. We publish those through LinkedIn. We publish those through our network database. And that keeps us front in mind, front of mind for potential clients. And they also share those white papers with others. So kind of get our name out there in our industry. So it's, you know, cold calling on companies, following up with them, building relationships over many, many years, writing white papers and following up with them electronically from a marketing perspective.
Wow. That's fantastic. I mean, you're doing all the right things, it sounds like, but 10 years, that's crazy.
It makes sense though. You know, we probably, in that 10-year time, we had probably been in Dallas meeting with them 8 to 10 times over that 10-year period, stopping in to say hello, giving them updates on what's happening in their industry, tell them about other transactions that are taking place and seeing how they're doing.
And, through that time, you're putting them through that they know you, they like you, they're starting to trust you, and then willing to kind of share their growth with you.
Exactly. We often meet companies years in advance of when they're ready to bring on another investor or sell themselves, which is a good thing because to get the best value, a company has to be well positioned.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of work and it's a multi-year process. Your companies typically should have an audit. They should have a good management team in place. They should have a strong marketing strategy. They should be, you know, adhering to a budget and running a forecast. And by meeting with companies early, we help them think about those things that they need to do to get ready to sell themselves in a couple of years. For a business owner, selling company or bringing on an investor is probably one of the most important transactions they will have in their business lifetime. And so it takes a lot of thought and a lot of preparation. So we grow with companies and advise them, you know, as they're growing.
Wow, that's fantastic. I'm sure your white papers are very educational to that business owner on what even they can expect as far as this process and the value of partnering with a private equity firm. And wow, that's great. Thanks, Gina.
Sure.
All right. So you did kind of touch us a little bit as far as how you stay in front of your network with regards to kind of your target of those that you want to kind of work with. But in general, your community, your network, how do you best stay in front of or nurture that audience?
Well, I would start out by saying it's hard. It takes a lot of time and focused effort because it's when you start to develop your network and your network becomes of a certain size, you can spend a lot of time just developing and staying in front of your network and not have much time left to do your day-to-day job and executing transactions. So it's a constant balance and a constant struggle to make sure we're finding the time. But importantly, to stay in touch with a network, it's important to have value add to your network, to your network. So it's kind of pick up the phone and say, hey, how you doing? You know, the Cubbies won the World Series. Isn't that awesome? The weather's great. You know, people aren't going to start picking up those phone calls. It gets to be not helpful. So the important thing is to have value add in those conversations. And that takes preparation before each and every call, and that takes time. So that's one of the challenges we have. So I'm picking up the phone and saying, hey, we haven't spoken in a while. I just want to give you an update on something that I saw that happened in the industry. You know, this company did this. This PE guy is saying this. And getting into that dialogue so it ends up being not just a couple-minute conversation but a 10, 15-minute conversation. And that all just takes a lot of work. Whether it's in person or on the phone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that makes sense. And I agree 100%. It's all about adding value to your audience. And if you've got different industries you're targeting or even just different communities or common interests, the more that you're spreading yourself thin, the more time it takes, obviously.
It is. It does. Like I said, it's a constant balance. And when working on executing a transaction for a client, it's you know, we always get very involved with our clients. We're giving, you know, 110%. And it's important to still pick up our heads and say, wait a minute, I need to follow up with you know, with my network and continue with the outreach, even though I'm busy executing with current transactions. Because if you go fallow for a year, the company is going to move on from that relationship with you.
Yeah, and they're starting to lose some trust in you too, I would say.
Exactly. Yep.
All right. So what advice would you offer to the business professional who is looking to grow their network?
Well, you know, first of all, get out there, which is a hard thing to do. And that is, you know, going to network events, going to networking events, going to conferences in your industry. So it's not necessarily just a generic networking event, but going into something, a conference that's related to what you do. And it's either to the, end users for your product or to people that are inputs to your product. So, you know, that can be going to a conference where you're having the opportunity to meet lawyers and accountants, or going to a conference that, for people that are actually buying the things that you have. And so once you go to events, and meeting people, don't just collect the business card and stick it into your CRM, but actually make an effort to follow up with people, and bring some value to the relationship. It's always challenging when a relationship is one-sided. And I get a lot of these as an investment banker. There are frequently people that will reach out and say, "Hey, I'd love to have a cup of coffee to pick your brain about investment banking." And every investment banker gets invitations like that. And sometimes those invitations, especially during kind of recruiting season at the college level or the MBA level, can be frequent invitations. Like I could have caffeine than I should by doing those. And those are tough conversations to have, and I usually have to kind of pull the plug on them after a while. It's important to network, but you also have to bring something to the table. And just being asked for information is a tough way to build a long-lasting relationship. I remember the people that have given me some information or provided me with an insight that I wouldn't otherwise have.
Yeah, I've been in those shoes as well, as far as, you know, my expertise being asked, you know, how can I better my digital marketing, or mm-hmm. what should I do on my website? Right. And I'm always willing to help out. Mm-hmm. However, you can only do that so many times, because otherwise you're just working for free in essence, which is
exactly
not the winning situation.
No. And it's not developing a relationship that's asking for information. It's not relationship building for the long term. You know, that person that asked you those questions and didn't provide something back, and it's not necessarily a service provided back, but some sort of value. Not anything back, you will forget that person, you know, in 5 years or 6 years. Mm-hmm. And when a career is a 40-year long career, you end up forgetting a lot of people.
Yeah. One of the things when I am reaching out to my network, if I need to utilize their expertise on some level, I usually will close up the conversation with, is there anything that I can help you with? Or is there any, you know, what type of referral can I offer you? Just to try to, you know, close it and making sure it's a two-way conversation then.
That's a great thing to do. That's a great thing to do that people value.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right. So moving back into another fun question here. So digital networking or traditional networking, which do you find more value in?
I do find more value in our business, in our industry, in in-person networking. But digital networking is also important because our business is not based on a high frequency of transactions. You know, we usually do 4 to 8 deals a year. It's really important to meet with people and build those relationships. But that has to be followed up with digital networking. And what we do is through LinkedIn, we post information on transactions we've done or insights that we have into the industry or relevant articles that we've seen that might interest, either private equity firms or other strategic companies or potential client companies, that they might find value add. And then we digitally outreach to our database of people by announcing deals, announcing white papers that we have. But we're very, very careful not to oversaturate our database of people. you know, like you, I'm sure I get a lot of emails, and if they're too frequent, I start unsubscribing because there's not much information. Like, seriously, I really don't care about who your latest hire is. You know, that type of information is not helpful. And so we're very careful to, you know, do, you know, probably like one email that we send out to our network every month and a half to 2 months. Mm-hmm. So we're not overwhelming our database or our network. Now, that's very different in other industries. You know, in other industries, a more frequent approach might make more sense. But in our industry, we don't want to overwhelm people with information that maybe they're not finding as value added.
Yeah, one of the things I like about your emails, because I am on your email list, is you change up kind of who the message is coming from. It's not always mm-hmm. coming from that same person. So you have a different voice and a different tone and maybe a different perspective on the information that's being shared as well. So I do like that.
Oh, that's great. Thank you for noting that. And what we do in our business is whoever worked on the transaction or wrote the white paper is the one sending it out. Mm-hmm. So that way it also helps when questions come back to us. You know, it's coming back to the right person. We have a pretty high open rate on our emails for that reason. And I would say our open rate on the email, our click-through rate on our emails to the information is usually around 31-33%.
Wow, that is really, really good numbers you've got going on there.
But we're pretty specific in who we have in our database. You know, there are people that are looking for this type of information generally.
Yeah. So going back to that initial question, it sounds like traditional networking, which in your industry, it totally makes sense that in person, you know, see you, touch you, hear you in person is that primary. And then you just use the digital activities to kind of just support and maintain that relationship in between those in-person touches.
That's correct. That is correct.
Nice.
And that seems to work best for us. You know, and you know, not only the in-person, but also picking up the phone and calling people.
Yeah. That seems to be a lost art nowadays.
It does. It is. It is. Because you'll remember a conversation more than you will remember an email.
Yes, very true.
And you get in a conversation, you gain information. You give information, you gain information. You gain insights. And it can lead into questions that may seem tangential, but are helpful. You know, frequently when we have conversations, we'll be learning about the company that we're talking to, but we'll also learn about insights to their competitors or other things happening in the industry. And then it's really important to us to take that information and get it in the right place in our CRM. So that way we have little tidbits of information that start making a whole story. And I look at our database on companies as being part of our value add in a transaction. So even though we haven't spoken to, you know, company ABC, we've gotten to know and they've told us information about company XYZ. When we call it company XYZ, we already know something about them, and that helps us provide more value to that company.
Oh, that I can only imagine. And you're just proving that you're a great quality partner overall.
Right. Right. And, you know, those databases, you know, a lot of times people don't put a lot of detail in CRM, and that's fine for your relationships that are short term. But once again, you know, we all have long careers, and you know, you're not going to remember a conversation that you had a year ago or 2 years ago or 3 years ago. And you're really not going to remember the conversation that your colleague had. And getting all that information into the database is great, because then you, for example, for our company, I can open up the database, open up a company, and I can see who talked to the company in the past, what deals we've shown them or what transactions we've talked to them about to help build on that conversation.
Nice. All right, let's have some fun with these next couple of questions here. If you could go back to your 20-year-old self, what would you tell yourself to do more of, less of, or differently with regards to your professional career?
Good question. I think I'm a little introspective today based on the election results. You know, I'm in an industry that is male dominated. And for the first two companies I was at out of college, I was the only woman in my office other than support staff. And so there was, there were challenges, and I worked with some great men, some amazing men. But I would say, kind of bringing it back to the networking idea, I did not always do a good job of staying in touch with people from my early in my career. And a big part of that was, well, first of all, I'm so old, we didn't have digital networking back then.
Not that old.
But I didn't have the natural connections. You know, it's, networking is tough because you do it on a business basis, but you know, creating the personal connections, like creating a friendship. And I didn't have those natural friendships with people senior to me, frankly. And it's, I wouldn't say any of them, none of those men would I ever point to as a mentor. Okay. You know, maybe sometimes I might give some lip service to that, but truly they weren't. And I lost contact with a lot of people early in my career for that reason. And I think if I were to go back to then, I would make more of an effort to keep up those relationships. Yeah. And I think that would continue to benefit me now.
That makes sense. Is there anything stopping you from trying to rekindle those relationships now?
You know, I do reach out to people now and touch base with them. And LinkedIn's been great for that, right? So you link in with them and they can do a follow-up call or follow-up touch base. And so that helps. That definitely helps. But it's just not as organic or as natural. Just keeping up the relationships are really important because you don't know in your career who – what relationships you're going to need 15, 20 years later.
Oh, that's a great statement.
Yeah, because, you know, people move around. You know, when I look at where I got to know somebody and where they are 15 years later, they can be in a completely different industry, different companies, different industries. And those networks, and sometimes, you know, you'll look at a company, you're like, oh, I don't know anyone there. And then you start digging in, you're like, oh, I met that person, you know, 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so it's, if you keep up with those relationships, it can really be beneficial.
Yeah, absolutely. Or that person could be the decision maker. 15
exactly.
years, that has, you know, an impact on your career. So,
Exactly.
Okay, so we've all heard of the 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon. Now, who would be the one person you'd love to connect with, and do you think you could do it within the 7th degree?
You know, my favorite interviewers is Terry Gross on NPR. She hosts a show and has been doing it for years and years called Fresh Air. And she's just an amazing conversationalist. And I would love to meet her. Could I do it within, I'm sure within my 6 or 7 degrees of separation, I could do it. Because with Kevin Bacon, I'm actually 2 degrees of separation.
Oh, really?
Over the years, I've met a number of people that have met him. They're like, oh yeah, I sat next to Kevin Bacon on an airplane, or I had dinner with Kevin Bacon. You know, so I'm sure if I'm that close to Kevin Bacon, I am that close to Terry Gross. I just don't know what my network is. So if anybody out there knows me and knows Terry Gross, I'd love an introduction.
Oh, I have a feeling very shortly you're going to get that introduction.
But if you've never listened to her show on NPR, and they're a lot archived, I'm sure she has podcasts. She is an interviewer, just a great conversationalist. It's you know, a joy to listen to. It's a lot of fun.
That's a good transition to my next question here. So, what are some of your go-to podcasts or news sources?
Over the last couple of years, last year and a half, 2 years, I've really gotten into listening to podcasts. I'm always focused on efficiency in my life. Mm-hmm. And so I listen to podcasts when I walk the dog, when I'm walking from the train, sometimes when I'm And so there's a kind of a group of podcasts I listen to directly. And one is Freakonomics. That's the Stephen Dubner kind of podcast about economics and economics in daily life. This American Life for pure entertainment. I listen to, especially lately, the 538 Politics podcast. I listen to Planet Money, TED Radio Hour sometimes. I usually scroll through those and find one that's of a topic of interest. The Harvard Business Review IdeaCast. I'm always looking for interesting perspectives on the industries I cover or approaches to business. The James Altucher Show, and he's done some amazing interviews recently. He did this one with a guy named Chris Voss on what to do in a negotiation, and I just finished listening to it, and I'm going to re-listen to it with some fantastic perspectives on negotiating. Chris Voss was actually I believe he worked for the CIA or the FBI, and he was a hostage negotiator. And now he's affiliated with USC, and he teaches classes on negotiation. He's a consultant in business negotiations. And there's a very famous book called, you want to get to yes in a negotiation. He actually has the opposite view, get to no. And when you first get to your first no question, you start building trust in a negotiation. His book actually is called something like Not Splitting the Difference. Like, that is the worst way to negotiate. But James Altucher usually has some great interviews that are relevant to business.
I got to check out that book. He sounds like he's really disrupting the whole world of negotiations a little bit.
Yes. Yes, he is. He is. And so the podcast is fascinating because he just covers a lot of different areas. Cool. So I highly recommend it.
I am going to check out a couple of those. Sometimes it's hard to fit in all the great content, at once. But
it is. I listen to them also when I'm driving. And we've even gotten my teenage daughter into listening to Freakonomics and This American Life.
Oh, so I bet she loves those.
She definitely does. And then I'm, of course, a news junkie. And, I read the Wall Street Journal every day. Gosh, since I was in college. I frequently am on Bloomberg.com. I check out CNN.com regularly throughout the day, although I've become frustrated with it over the last couple of years as it's become more and more fluffy and light on world news. Mm-hmm. I look at LinkedIn Pulse because it feeds me news articles that I'm directly interested in. And there's sometimes great targeted reads. I look at Reuters.com. And then through the Google interface, I have a lot of news feeds on industries that I follow and companies that I follow. So I'm constantly getting those relevant articles in my email. I generally don't like the Google News interface, but the actual article feeds are fantastic.
Yeah, wow, thanks. That's lots of really good sources that we'll put this list and links on the show notes.
Sure.
So you mentioned a book. What book are you reading right now?
I just finished up recently a book called The Power of Habit. And he's a Pulitzer Prize winning journalist, and he really dug into how to make life changes just through the power of habit, and how you can make yourself more efficient and make better decisions all through the power of habit. So it's a good read.
That one is on my reading list right now. I think it's actually sitting in my living room waiting for me to read it. So I'm excited that you braved it pretty well.
It's a quick read, and my colleague also just read it too and liked it. So I highly recommend it.
Cool. So any final words or advice to offer our listeners regarding growing and supporting your network?
I would say it is an activity you have to participate in every single day. It's a constant outreach to people, but you have to bring value. And so how do you bring value? Well, you've got to be smart. You have to be educated on your industry or your services. So it's not just picking up the phone and saying, hey, how are the Cubs doing? That's a friendship. That's not a business network. And it's important to stay in touch with people. And it's a constant daily activity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great advice. All right. So if anyone is interested in getting in touch with you, what would be the best way that they can reach out?
Well, LinkedIn is great. I'm Gina Cocking on LinkedIn, and my company website is coladv.com, and we have a lot of information there, and you can connect with me through our website also.
Fantastic. Those will be in the show notes. All right. Thanks a lot, Gina, for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, this was a lot of fun. This wraps up our episode of Social Capital. A huge thank you to Gina Cocking for taking the time to connect with us. Join us next week for another great guest as we continue the conversation on networking and building your community. If you need me, please send an email to Lori@socialcapitalpodcast.com. Otherwise, we will see you next week.
That's all for this episode of the Social Capital Podcast. Be sure to visit socialcapitalpodcast.com for show notes, more episodes, and to check out our free ebooks on business and networking.